I've always been a bit off. I grew up with my grandparents in the outskirts of St. Paul, Minnesota. You could call them hippies if you want. They were emotionally distant people. I could tell they weren't very close with their child, my mother, and they weren't happy with their decision to have me. Honestly, most of the parenting I got were from the other residents of St. Paul, this close-knit community of outsiders. And my parents? Well, I've never met them. My mother is in jail, possibly for life. Not sure why, but seeing as my dad is dead, I have my suspicions. Honestly though, they've never been a part of my life, and I'm not gonna start caring now. But I'm here to tell you about one of my most private and weird personal problems. Because of recent events, I've grown a bit existential. I thought it was about time I shared my story. My grandparents told me I had a skin disease, something that could transfer from one person to another if I wasn't careful when spending time with others. They had all kinds of fancy Latin words for it and statements from dermatology specialists. Looking back at it, I should have asked a lot more questions. I figured out it was nonsense by age 7. Either way, I was told to stay away from people and to keep to myself. I had to wear gloves at the dinner table, and there were no hugs and kisses. Instead, I'd get a steady gloved handshake when I did something good, and I was sent to the basement when I did something bad. The basement had no books, which was punishment enough. Just a dark room where I was left to stew on my anxieties. During my formative years, I was homeschooled. I noticed that I kept surprising people with my ability to retain, observe, and use information. While my grandparents might quiz me on European history, for example, I not only knew the answers perfectly, I could discuss them, challenge them, and see patterns from other textbooks I'd read. They kept calling me a smart kid, but I've never really felt smart. I just see things and remember them. If that's all there is to being smart, then it's not that big of a deal, trust me. But it came to a point where I could no longer ignore it. People in my community came to me for help, and I started picking up foreign languages. I learned fluent Spanish watching Telemundo and a lot of German from documentaries about the Second World War. Today, I speak 8 languages fluently, but being intelligent, whatever that means, is not just a boon. You're constantly second-guessing yourself, asking if there's a better answer. You're worried you don't have all the pieces of the puzzle. Answers and the questions that precede them are never good enough. There is always another step to take, another angle to consider. Imagine being wrecked by constant doubt and insecurities. It leaves a mark on a person, and I'm no exception. I pretty much withdrew from other people. I couldn't imagine myself trying to help others. What if I guided them wrong? What if they took an unwillingly false statement as a fact? It is exhausting trying to be on the right side of knowledge and opinion. I was constantly on edge, withdrawing from St. Paul to focus on myself. I learned to find comfort in nature, mostly from a friend I made as a kid. It was an early morning in May, and the air was still thick with dew. I took a walk around the lake when I noticed this awful cry. The Tucson couple had been setting up fox traps to protect their chickens, and something was stuck. I hurried over. At first, I thought it was a small dog, but the shape of the paws were all wrong. Taking a closer look, I realized I was looking at a baby black bear. The mother was nowhere to be seen, and the little thing was screaming its heart out. I felt awful, but as I approached, It lashed out towards me. I tried to calm it down, and the strangest thing happened. The moment I put my hand on its forehead, it just stopped screaming. The little animal just stared at me, confused. Those big black eyes locked onto mine, and I could tell it knew my intention. It knew I meant it no harm. I'm sure of it. It was just scared, confused, and in terrible pain. "I hope you," I whispered, "you'll be fine." I made a mental checklist of all the things I needed. It might require stitches, bandages, maybe even a splint. I had to check if the leg was broken or merely sprained. It could be dehydrated, starved, or sick. I didn't see any signs of mange or other diseases, so I just fed the animal, whispering comfort. "I'll be right back." As I stepped away, it didn't panic. It knew I'd be back. I raided our first aid kit and spent most of the day caring for it. I didn't bring it back to the house, as I wanted the mother to have a chance to find it. Instead, I cleaned it, cared for it, and kept it company. The leg wasn't broken, and there was a deep gash. The bear also had a limp when he walked. Understandably, I figured it might be permanent. Still, it seemed calm in my presence. In a way, I felt a connection to it. We understood one another in a way that people usually didn't. It listened. It leaned against me and asleep as I practiced my Mandarin. I called him Wojtek. Like the bear, the Polish 22nd Artillery Support Company adopted during the Second World War. I spent 4 days with Wojtek that summer. Every night, I tucked him in next to a large rock so no wild animals would find them. And every morning, I'd bring him eggs, toast, and bacon. My grandparents usually let me eat in my room alone, so they didn't notice me sneaking out to share my dinner. At the night of the fourth day, as I tucked in Wojtek, I heard this rumbling noise, a tree breaking. The sun was setting, and I didn't even notice the black shadow flanking me. I turned around, and I realized I was facing a fully grown black bear, and I was standing between her and her cub. As she stood up on her hind legs, I remember thinking that I didn't even have the time to panic. I almost laughed. My death would be so sudden, I didn't even get the chance to regret my actions. I froze, looking at those enormous claws, the jaws large enough to swallow my head. As she roared, I could feel my body collapsing to the ground. I thought I'd die from the sound alone. Then I noticed Wojtek. He just stepped out and placed himself between me and his mother. He stood up on his little legs, making this tiny yelp noise over and over. It almost looked like he tried to mimic me, even though it pained him to stand on his wounded leg. I just crawled into a ball and made myself as small as possible. Over and over, I heard Wojtek screaming at his mother. The air grew silent, like the feeling you get before a lightning strike. I held my breath as I heard trees bending and breaking. Looking up, I saw Wojtek limping into the woods, following his mother away from St. Gall. "I don't speak bear, but I'll tell you, Wojtek saved my life. I'm sure of it." That summer, I started spending a lot more time with animals. There was something so relieving about being understood, without having all these expectations looming over me. Animals are so simple and so grateful for little. I started spending more time downtown, helping out at the animal shelter. I knew my grandparents wouldn't approve of me spending too much time around other people because of my skin condition. so I just told them I was at the library, which wasn't entirely untrue. I borrowed a lot of books on the anatomy of common domesticated animals. I can clearly remember the first time I helped feeding the dogs at the shelter. They'd bark and growl, but as soon as I stepped into the room, they just stopped. All those little eyes turning to me, staring, as if they wondered what they were even looking at. They were already listening to me, trying to figure me out. They knew I was there to help. When I was 16, my grandparents died. They died within 3 months of one another, and I was left with an inheritance I didn't know what to do with. I invested most of it, sold the house, and moved into a small apartment downtown. By now, I was a de facto and unlicensed veterinarian. Nearby farms would sometimes call me up and give me something off the books for my help. I can't count the amount of cows and goats I've treated. Most of the farmers called me Dr. Charming. You know, as in Prince Charming, similar to a Disney princess. I used my inheritance to pay for my college studies. My investments also paid off handsomely, allowing me some greater luxuries. I got my BMD degree ahead of schedule from SU. I can honestly say that it was easier than expected, and I started to realize that many of my fears were exaggerated. I still live largely separated from other people though, and I didn't have many friends. I had a few acquaintances, and most of the nearby farmers knew me by my name, and that's not really what I'd call a relationship. As I turned 20, I decided I would make a conscious effort to be more social and face my fears. I had known for years that I didn't really have a contagious skin condition. That lie wasn't really all that held me back. Honestly, I just felt like a freak. I'd get lost talking to other people, and it would be exhausting trying not to correct them. Instead, I just held my tongue and stick to subjective topics. Music, film, literature, favorite actor, that sort of thing. It was during an after work with the others from the vet clinic that I first met Veronica. I was an unkissed, unloved, and insecure virgin at the time. Veronica took a liking to me, amazed by the amount of random nonsense I could dig out of my brain. She described it as having an unlimited flower bed of trivia she could make bouquets from. I'd never heard anything like it. While our first meeting was short and awkward, our following 4 dates went by like a charm. We'd go for long walks, and she'd ask me all sorts of questions. "It's funny," she'd say. "You could be a literal rocket scientist, but you can't pick up on sarcasm." One thing led to another, and we started dating. Veronica was the charming and outgoing ice pick I needed to break out of my shell, and to this day, I credit her with what little social experience I have. She was warm, understanding, and had no trouble explaining social cues I might have missed. It didn't take me too long to get a hang of it, as soon as I could hold my own in a conversation with her friends. But things weren't perfect. After about a month, I remember waking up in the middle of the night to find her sitting at the edge of the bed, crying hysterically. She held her face in her hands, shivering and unblinking. I'd never seen her do that before. As I held her, she just started to speak nonsense. "None of it matters," she'd say. "We're nothing but walking bees, broken clocks. We're useless, fragile, and so, so insignificant." I tried to calm her down, but it was impossible. We'd sit for hours, and she'd just spew these horrible, existential anxieties. She'd have these mental breakdowns every now and then, several times a week, and she started recoiling from my attempts to comfort her. I made her feel this awful dread. It just feels like you're gonna tell me something awful, she explained. You're in my head, and I want you out. It worried me how much she reflected my own anxieties, and it was clear I was making her unhappy. My worst thoughts were coming out of her mouth, so we broke up. That relationship lasted a few months, but I couldn't get over it. The way I turned her from this happy-go-lucky and independent woman to a nervous wreck, it made me feel like an abuser. I had no idea what was even going on, and I couldn't tell what was wrong with me. I heard from a friend of a friend that she started taking Xanax and going to therapy. I'm not sure what I think about her therapist, Dr. Bogan. That woman gives me the creeps. Back then, I spent a lot of time with my work colleague turned friend, Jacob. He was a few years older than me and had just gotten his own BMD. He has seen a lot of the strangeness I brought to the clinic, and he was one of the few who didn't seem to mind or question it. He had this amazing laugh that could easily break the tension. I remember this one night we spent at the bar, about after a week after my breakup with Veronica. It was one of the first times I got really drunk. The bottle of blueberry wine felt like stepping on a goddamn landmine, and my shell just cracked wide open. I'd gush about how amazing she was, how she made me feel, how beautiful she was. I'd quote love poems by Burns and Keats, laugh, cry, and finish most of the bottle on my own. At the time, Jacob was nothing but supportive. He'd pat me on the back, he'd make sure I drank plenty of water, and he'd ask me all kinds of follow-up questions. He just wanted me to get it all out. He actually told me it was nice to see me act all human for once. At the end of the night, he helped me get back home. Before we parted ways, I gave him this big hug, and he froze. 2 weeks later, I found out he and Veronica had started dating. Out of nowhere, he just started courting her. She'd appreciated the attention, and the two had gotten along. Jacob was absolutely smitten by her, and she had found someone willing to overlook and tolerate her exhausted mental state. The two of them just turned into this natural couple, like I'd never even been a part of the equation. Honestly, it kind of pissed me off. I quit my job and moved to the next town over. They, on the other hand, got married. I wasn't invited to the wedding. For a few years, that's been my life. I've been keeping to myself and spending time with the local wildlife. I've taken a few trips to Europe and reinvested my winnings. I've had a few short relationships with a handful of women, but as soon as I saw a hint of what happened to Veronica reflect in their behavior, I've had to leave. I've left a trail of broken hearts, and after a while, I just stopped trying to justify it. I was being selfish. I couldn't keep hurting people just to get over my own insecurities. It wasn't until the Thanksgiving parade last autumn that I accidentally ran into Jacob and Veronica again. They had brought their kids, and I barely recognized the two at first. They looked so suburban. As Jacob's oldest son was waving a balloon around, I noticed Jacob staring at me from across the road. I figured enough time had passed that we could talk as adults, so we met up after the parade. It warmed my heart to see Veronica do so well. A few memories of her beautiful hair on the pillow next to me surfaced, and I felt this amazing warmth in my chest. As she stepped away to help her kids use the restroom, Jacob approached me. He had this uneasy smile, something I'd never seen on him before. We shook hands, and his smile faded away. "You want to talk to her?" he asked. "No, I just wanted to see how you were doing. Long time no see, you know." "You sure about that?" he chuckled, trying to diffuse the tension. "Yeah, sorry, I didn't mean to." No, no, Jacob said, nodding. I get it. No worries, man. It's all history. He looked down on his hand, blinking. But if it's okay with you, he continued, I'd like for you to piss off and leave my wife alone. I want to say that was the last time I saw Jacob, but that wasn't the case. He added me on Facebook so he could stalk me. He'd send me long emails, talking at length about how he knew what I really felt for his beloved Veronica. It'd be these absurd, paranoid rants. He'd ask me about my dreams, about my intentions, even creepy private things, like how much I touch myself while thinking about her. That's my wife, he'd write. I know how you feel about her, and I'll wring your neck if I see you looking at her like that again. At first, I tried to calm him down, but after a while, I just started blocking him. Everything I said just made him worse, and I was honestly getting worried. Once I saw him drive past my clinic in the middle of the day, had he really taken time off work to drive to the next town over to check on me? For what? To make sure I wasn't screwing his wife? He started leaving notes. He'd call me at work and send letters. He'd get new email addresses and get past my filters. I honestly considered calling the police, and I told him as much. Huge mistake. A few months ago, I was out jogging down a nearby trail. I was listening to a lecture on 40s filmmakers and had blocked out most of the world. It is nice to just keep my mind busy. It helps me compartmentalize my anxiety. As I was passing by a broken streetlight, I suddenly felt a push. I was knocked forward, scraping my hands and knees on the pavement. Surprised, I just thought I tripped on something. As I turned, I realized I was being attacked. It was surreal seeing Jacob there. He wasn't wearing his reading glasses, and he just stared at me with the same unblinking eyes that Veronica used to get. In his right hand was a pistol, pointed in my direction. Get up, he said. Now. A thousand possibilities raced in my mind. I had to comply, but I also had to make an escape plan. I could feel my thoughts kicking into high gear, brain locking itself into running 100 possibilities at once. I just stood there, opening and closing my mouth, like a trout out of water. My brain was drowning in thoughts on dry land. Step off the path, he continued. Walk. You don't get to talk, he screamed. You don't get that privilege. You get to step off the path. And you get to do what I say. I nodded and started walking. Jacob's hand was trembling. I could hear the rattle of the fully loaded magazine. We stepped off the trail and into the woods, stepping over logs, bushes, and zigzagging between saplings. It felt like an eternity. I'd been waiting for a chance to dive for cover, but at this range, it'd be impossible for him to miss me with all those bullets. One or two, maybe, but a full magazine, no way. I wouldn't let you destroy my family, he said. I knew you want her back. You should have listened. To what? I asked. You pursued me. I haven't done anything. Don't you get it? He laughed. You don't see it? He steadied his aim as I backed up. He was being smart, not aiming for the head. It'd be a body shot, one wrong move, and I'd be gone. It doesn't matter how many times you've imagined it, facing down an insecure barrel of a gun is like staring into a well of darkness, knowing that eternity waits to drag you to the bottom. I tried to force my mind to cooperate, to give me something, a solution, a calculation, something to guide me, yet all that was left was insecurities, indecisiveness, and dread. This was real. This could be it. Nothing matters anymore, Jacob continued. You and I were just jokers in a deck stacked against us. there's an entire cosmos of evidence that just makes us. He just screamed himself red, his eyes bloodshot and unblinking, refused to look away. I should have never have taken pity on you. I should have left you to suffer, but I just feel you. You're in my head, opening these doors. I don't want to think about these things. I don't want to think about you taking her away from me. I don't want to think about how dumb, small, and useless I am. Why does this keep coming back whenever you're on my mind? Jacob, I... No! He yelled, aiming down the sight. No more poison! I should have been dead. A bullet in my chest. Left to die next to a birch sapling. That's what he anticipated. But that's not what happened. Had I gotten a better look, I would have noticed him sooner. A massive 540-pound black bear with a limp, enraged. The moment Jacob raised his gun to take a shot, he was bowled over like a rotten log. I could briefly see his legs and head switch place as he was knocked flat on the ground. Two shots went off as a familiar roar echoed through the woods. The same roar I'd heard at night when a baby bear walked away from me all those years ago. I saw the whole thing. I saw Jacob's arm ripped into pieces as the bear bore down on him. I saw him dragged across the forest as that enormous bear jaw clamped down on his legs. I heard bones break as the bear stood up on his hind legs, only to push down with all his weight, biting, clawing, mauling, breaking, a body tossed around like a wet paper towel, spraying blood in all directions. Jacob's horrible screams just suddenly stopped with the snap of a joint, but the bear wasn't letting up. He was tearing him apart. This wasn't just an animal attack. This was retribution. I just slumped to my knees. The bear limped over to me, unscathed, but covered in blood. The thought hit me that he might just be a wild animal attacking us or protecting its territory, but I knew that wasn't it. There was no way this wasn't Wojtek, and there was no way he'd hurt me. Instead, I leaned my sweaty forehead against his cold nose and cried. He nuzzled up against me. Over the years, his little yelping noises had turned into deep, comforting snores. I'm sorry, I vowed. I'm so sorry. Wojtek kept me company and felt my pain. Jacob's death was labeled as a result of a wild animal attack. Veronica had told the police about his deteriorating mental state, and a few locals had heard shots go off just as a bear roared. The conclusion was that he'd probably provoked the bear. I didn't say a thing. There was no need to try and explain my involvement. There was no way they'd believe me anyway. I've tried to summarize my thoughts about this. They're not rational, but I don't think there's anything rational about my life at this point. I think my mind is somehow contagious. I think my mood, my mindset, and worries can spread. Animals don't really have the capacity to understand my anxieties, so they just pick up on my immediate intentions. They understand the basics, they don't need to rest. But people are complicated. I think Veronica picked up on my worries, social and otherwise. I think it caused some sort of short circuit in her ego. And Jacob? Well, the first time I hugged him, I must have shocked his system with my thoughts of Veronica. Maybe that's what caused him to pursue her in the first place. Maybe seeing me again and shaking my hand reignited something that had laid dormant for years. I don't know if I can trust myself around people. It is so much easier to write, to share things online. No one gets hurt. No one gets intrusive thoughts. You can just lean back and call BS on my story. I don't know what to do. how to move on. Can I even see a therapist? Either way, I think I'll be alone from now on. Then again, as I look to the woods, I know there are those who care.